Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to Dome and Domer, the oldest Notre Dame football podcast on the planet. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, also from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey. All right, Ed, I'll start with you. This is the biggie. I mean, here we are. We got to where we wanted to get to. At this point, I will say that there's some good and bad. There's some good and bad news for Notre Dame. And we did talk about this earlier in the season, but one of the things we talked about is whoever's standing at the end of the day will have survived the gauntlet of injuries. And unfortunately for Notre Dame, they've stacked up on them. And there's guys playing hurt. I mean, there's stuff that we're not even hearing about. And right. There are guys that are not at 100%. And I'm not here making excuses. I'm just kind of setting the reality of the matter of what we're up against. So I wanted to start with a little bit of bad news. What's your level of concern related to that now that we've got Mills out? The one guy that you kind of pretty much need against Georgia is now out. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Yeah. No, it's you know, my contention for the last several weeks is that, you know, eventually you're going to get your roster is only going to be so deep. Every team is, you know, has played 13, 14 games. Every team has injuries. Obviously, Georgia has a very significant one with its starting quarterback out. So, you know, nobody's going to shed any tears for Notre Dame. You've got to go with what you've got. And, you know, that's why, you know, I think scheme and coaching and game plan and play calling become all that more important. And, you know, you've got to execute really, really well. I don't know. Do you guys know if Rocco Spindler's playing? I mean,
he is.
He practiced today.
Yeah, okay, he did good. Practice. Yeah.
Okay, good. Because, you know, that continuity along the offensive line is so important. And they really started to gel in the second half of the year. And you could see a drop off against Indiana when he went out.
Yep.
I'm amazed at how well Notre Dame's defense has played, given the fact that, you know, they haven't had an All-American quarterback for the last 5 or 6 weeks. They did not have their two starting rush ends, you know, basically
yeah, both
since the
them.
Beginning of the season. And, you know, their most promising freshman linebacker, who had basically worked his way into the starting lineup, you know, hasn't played in a month, right? So, you've got to sort of have a mentality, and this team seems to have that mentality.
Yeah.
I don't think they're spending much time thinking about their injuries because Rubio has played, because
guys have stepped up.
You know, I can't remember his name now, has played, because Heinisch has played. I mean, it's not like these guys are, you know, just falling off the turnip truck this week and they've got to somehow plug a hole.
Right.
They've had a pretty deep rotation. Now those guys will all have many more snaps. You know, Cross will probably play more than he's ever had. So those things, you know, matter, but, you know, I think for Notre Dame, you know, at least on the defensive side of the ball, they have to play. If they play very, very well, I think they will be pretty stout against Georgia. Georgia's not an incredibly powerful offensive team.
You know, one of the things, Coffee, that being that it's the holidays and everything, it's kind of given us time to flip through YouTube and watch a few more other podcasts or other pundits talking about Notre Dame. One of them that I watched that I found kind of fascinating, I thought he made a really good point. Saban was on Pat McAfee's show, and McAfee asked him about, hey man, this is a different world that we live in with, you know, 15 games potentially. This is like NFL level now. Mm. What do you think about the way that the game has changed and how guys probably aren't tackling guys to the ground during practice now? And Saban said, absolutely, man, you have got to manage this. There is no way we would be tackling guys to the ground right now. It's not even feasible.
Oh, absolutely. One of the network sites had a practice report saying where Joe Rudolph got mad at one of the scout team players for going at the starters too hard. And we talked earlier about how it's a game of attrition where you're just trying to keep the injuries at bay. You're trying to keep everybody healthy. You're trying not to get everybody hurt. This is just, I mean, it's, you do have to manage it. And at this point, going full steam practices. Now, the good news is you're on, like you said, game 14, 15. Do you need full steam practices at this point? I put it to you that You don't really. I mean, the key parts, if you're not hitting hard in the fall and going into the beginning of the season, that's where you run into problems. There were one or two Charlie Weiss coach teams where their depth was just so bad that they weren't having full speed practices at the beginning, and the performance during the season showed it. So I think you really need to, that balance is just so, so crucial, because Notre Dame's defense really can't afford to lose too many more guys. I mean, like you said, we're already starting to scrape the bottom.
Yeah.
Well, not the bottom of the barrel, but, and let's also keep in mind, in addition to this attrition, the transfer portal really has hurt a lot of teams' depth. I mean, it used to be like the third string defensive tackle at Georgia would still be like a low five-star guy. Now he's starting at Texas Tech or whatever. And I'm just making those names up. I mean, just to, but to show that rather than ride the bench to be there in case of these injury situations, those guys are gone, or the guys are there are a lot younger, a lot more inexperienced. This is true at Notre Dame and of a bunch of other places. So the combination of lesser depth, more games, that's going to make things a lot more of a crapshoot.
It's definitely part of watching college football right now into the playoffs, because this is going to rear its ugly head for sure. But let's shift to kind of the good news. And Ed, you started to allude to this just a little bit, but you know, I would make the argument that the scheming and everything is so intense and at such a high level when you're dealing with teams at this level that there's not really a lot of difference there. I mean, there's going to be some one-on-one matchups that teams create because they've scouted us and they know certain guys do this. But I ultimately think at the end of the day, the reason Notre Dame has a shot at this is because of the culture that they have. There's no way you can explain how they did what they did in running the table from the horrendous loss at NIU. And for them to execute at a really high level, to get all the way to here, to have players commit to staying over Christmas and not a peep comes out of the program, that guys are rolling their eyes that they had to do that. There's clearly something special going on in the locker room. And I think that's what gives us hope that there might be a shot at this thing.
Well, I think what's so interesting is, you know, one of the things that Golden said was, yeah, of course we miss, you know, we're going to miss Riley Mills. You know, he's a beast, but you know, he referenced his leadership qualities, right? You know, he referenced sort of what he brought, you know, day in and day out, sort of on the practice field, you know, during the course of a game. And, you know, I know it's trite and a cliched, but so many teams do fall apart after a loss like that, or at least they don't fulfill their potential. Whereas, you know, you got to believe that the Riley Millses, the Howard Crosses, the Jack Kaisers of the world, the Riley Leonards of the world, you know, Bo Collins, you know, these guys that are, you know, in their fourth, fifth, sixth year of, you know, of college football, it's sort of is that payoff for when, you know, what BK used to call, you know, RKGs, you know, right kind of guys, you know, I mean, when you go in the portal, or when you bring, you know, and Freeman talks all the time about a fit, a cultural fit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is apparent that this is what he's talking about. That, like you said, Mike, to recover from that type of a loss and to improve every week there on out. I mean, it is not one single, we have never talked about effort or attitude this whole season. And there have been many seasons where we have. You know, there have been some bad apples. There's been, you know, some malaise.
There's been some 15-yard penalties and some stuff like that. But that's it. I mean, that's zero outside of that.
All the mistakes they've made have been mistakes of aggression for the most part. And, you know, that is the sign of, you know, again, it's you know, it's the sign of chemistry and culture. And as sappy as that sounds, at this stage, when everybody's talented and everybody's good, that really matters, especially now Notre Dame hasn't, you know, Notre Dame hasn't sort of had a super close sort of down to the wire game, you know, in a while. So, but I don't have any qualms about that. I kind of think that when you sort of play on the edge for 10 weeks, knowing
well,
the losses,
USC was kind of a little bit there, right? It got a little scary.
Into the second half, it was.
Yeah, got a little scary.
You're right. You're right. you're right. But it was also sort of like they were.
They were in control. I get it. Yeah.
Kind of were.
Yeah. But, Coffee, one of the I have not done this at all this entire season, and I finally did it a couple days ago, and that was watch the opposing teams podcast. And so this one was called Film Don't Lie, and I give credit to these guys. They break it down. Like, it's a serious tactical breakdown of the opposing team that you're playing, and they literally showed Notre Dame's offense and Notre Dame's defense. I pretty much watched the offensive side of things, and they kind of just broke us down as a team and said, okay, here's what Notre Dame does well, and here's where there's gaps and where the opportunities are for Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, the thing that you can't get to in a thing like that is the culture in the locker room, because you have no clue. You're just dealing what you see. You just see what you see on the field. And they had high remarks for Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and our tackles and all of that. But then they broke down where they thought the – and look, this is where the fascinating thing is going to come in with these one-on-one matchups. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on what exactly does Notre Dame have to do offensively right that's going to be the key as to whether or not they can hang in with Georgia and pull it
off? Well, I think that the few Georgia games that I watched, and most of them were the two games they played against Texas. Texas seemed to have some success on the ground. And I think having three top flight players who are capable of running the ball in Price, Love, and Leonard, I think that's going to be something Georgia really hasn't seen this year. I mean, I can't think of a team in the SEC that was that's really able to do that when your first guy comes out and your second guy comes in, he's almost as good as the first guy is. And meanwhile, you've got a quarterback who you can't, you've got to put some effort into spying on him, because you give him an inch, and if there aren't any receivers, open, Georgia he's just going to run.
Georgia Tech was the only team they probably saw that gave him that, right? I mean, at least that kid could run the football at the quarterback position.
True. I think there's also going to be some unknowns. I mean, the practice report said Charles Jagasaw was playing backup at right guard. So he's physically able to come back in and play. I think part of the reason you wouldn't see him in the starting lineup is you don't want to break something, or you don't want to fix something that isn't broken. I mean, right now, this offensive line has a cohesion. They've gelled. They've played very, very well. I think if you can put Jagasaw in there to spell people to again, we're working against the injury bug. We're working against fatigue. Having a pair of fresh legs who was a preseason slated to start before he got hurt and now is healed up and can come back and contribute, those are things that you don't that are really more of a surprise. If KVA can play for a couple plays, again, the better.
I saw the practice report. He didn't even do like the.
Well, he participated in some of the drills.
He's not going to.
He definitely
play.
Won't
he's
start. Like, he, I don't think
hold
he's going to play
for the next.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play. But yeah. I think he would definitely be an option for the Orange Bowl if they get. I mean,
if they get through this week first, obviously.
This is kind of similar with Jagasaw a little bit. Do you guys remember how did Blake Fisher perform when wasn't he out for quite some time as a freshman, and then he came back to play the bowl game?
I seem to remember that.
But the reason he played is because his position player left, I think, or opted out, right? He
had to play because of an opt out.
Earned it and they put him in. Yeah.
No. But I'm just curious, like how I can't remember like how well he performed, because that's a long time to be, you know, out of game, game situation.
Sure.
I agree.
I think the gelling and all that stuff, I mean, Coffee's probably right about that. It's too much of a gamble to upset that at the moment.
No, absolutely. I mean, if the five starters can start, you want them to start.
You want them to start. But then if you start seeing that, hey, man, Jagasaw looks like he could help us, get him in there if we're not.
Yeah, even just for a couple plays.
Just to see. But, you know, here's what I think is going to happen, because I think Notre Dame was pretty wise against IU. I think they were playing it conservatively. I personally think they were trying to keep Leonard out of any kind of contact that they didn't need him to get into. And that's why you didn't see him run a whole lot. But I think all options are out there with Georgia.
No doubt.
I think Leonard is going to run the football. They're going to go three with an RPO, and it's going to be any one of those three guys running the football or a quick hit out, just wherever the defense gives us. And Leonard's going to have to run for 75 yards. If he doesn't run for 75 yards, I don't see how we can win the football game. But having said that, Ed, I think the ray of hope that we saw in Riley Leonard's last two games, I mean, you take out that interception, which was a deflection at the line of scrimmage, there was some real pinpoint passing that he made that was probably some of his best throws of the year. And that just goes to show the level of confidence that he's at right at this very moment. I mean, some of those balls that he threw at the USC game and a couple at IU, I mean, those were flat the out throw, right the on the spot.
The throw to Greathouse over the middle, and the throw when he was hit, obviously the long throw that kind of sealed the game to Faison. I mean, those were very, very confident.
They were right there. To the tight end in the corner in the USC game. I mean, that was one hell of a ball. I mean, ball had to be perfectly dropped.
Definitely. No, he's made great strides in those short to intermediate passes. If you remember the first two or three games, I mean, you know, he couldn't hit a back out of the back.
No, he's throwing over his head.
Yes. He couldn't hit it down and out. You know, he was just really struggling with the things that move the chains and those really important first down throws and, you know, second and short throw, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, no, there's, I think Riley Leonard will play well. I mean, these are the kind of games that I think his personality really helps, because he's sort of, he doesn't appear to be a guy that is at all sort of worried about what people think anymore. Right.
Yeah.
He's just going out trying to help his
team.
He's
kind of past that point. I agree with you. He's past that point.
Yeah. I think he wasn't, you know, after, you know, week one or two or three, maybe, but he seems to have sort of become very comfortable wearing the mantle of Notre Dame's quarterback. And that's part of the job. You know, that's part of the thing, is you got to feel really comfortable in your own skin walking around, knowing that basically you're the center of the offense. You know, you make things go. Everybody's looking at you. You're not a Duke. Sorry, but you know, you're not there anymore. You're not playing in the, you know, Camping World Bowl. You know, it's different. So
it's gonna be real interesting. Quick,
like, did you guys, I went back, I watched a little bit of the game. I was at the game, but I watched a little bit of the game, and I talked to a couple IU fans, and it's really kind of amazing, you know, how well we covered their receivers.
Yeah, I was surprised. Yeah.
You know, I was driving to the game, Ryan Harris, you know, in the pregame was talking up this IU receiver, you know, how like the key to the game was stopping him and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if he caught a ball, maybe like 1 for 7 yards or something crazy like that. You know, he was just a total non-factor. And they made, you know, obviously at the end they did a little bit of damage and they hit a few slants. But besides that, I mean, he had nobody to throw to, and he threw a lot of incompletions.
Yep.
And he threw the ball away several times. And
yeah.
You know, that's what they're going to have to do in this game as well, is basically make Georgia one-dimensional. Because I think if they could make Georgia one-dimensional, they've got to, as Mike Coffey said, Notre Dame also has to spend some spy capital on this quarterback. You know,
yeah, I think so.
Jalen Snead.
Yeah, I think you've got to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got to put some pressure on this kid and then not let him scramble, because he'll panic a bit. He's never been in this situation. This is way bigger than any light he's been in. And I just think that you got to get him confused a bit. But also, having said that, Coffee, I know the big elephant in the room, and I'm not picking on him, but if I was Georgia, I'd sure set up some one-on-one matchups with Christian Gray out on the corner. I mean, you're going to see that. But I think the beautiful thing is that's the whole key to this culture that exists on this team. Those guys have his back. They're not, I think that the guys behind him, and they all know what the situation is. They're smart guys. I mean, they know it.
Sure.
Are they going to be leaning a little bit that way? Yeah, they probably will. But man, I'll tell you what, who's going to give them high fives the first time he blocks a defensive pass is those guys are going to be in his face, man. Like, good job. And building his confidence, and because they know what they're up against.
Yeah, I mean, we watched Gray get picked on a little bit at the SC game, but then late in the game turns around, 90-whatever yard pick six. I mean, he kept his head in the game. As you said, his teammates had his back. I don't recall him necessarily getting beat on too bad in the IU game, but you know,
no, not at all.
I think you're right. I mean, when someone like Morrison is out and everybody else has to jump up a notch, it's one thing to be covering their second best receiver versus covering their first. I think, but like you said, this is where the culture makes a difference. This is where you make a bad play. Okay, fine. Just put it out of your head, get back in on the next play. And that's going to be the one where you have the 95-yard touchdown return. So
I think an underrated part of that culture is in the games where individual players have struggled, whether that was Riley Leonard early, whether that was Christian Gray late in the season, whether that was some pivotal play calls that weren't executed well or whatever, Golden and Denbrock have stepped up and put that on themselves every single time.
Yeah, they have. You're right.
I could have called a better play.
Yep. Yep.
I put Christian in some bad situations.
Yep.
Yada, yada. You know, that's what they've done. And I think that, you know, anytime, you know, it's not just a rah-rah culture. It's a mindset of continuous improvement. When you go to practice every day convinced that you still have a lot of work to do to reach your potential, to play your best, I mean, that's 80%, 90% of the battle with young kids, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's keeping them from thinking that they figured it out.
Yeah.
And also keeping, you know, I mean, I think Brian Kelly had a little bit of, you know, he had it all figured out. And it cost him in several games. Yeah. And you know, Freeman, we know, is sort of just a voracious learner and consumer of information. And he's getting really good, I think, at separating the crap from the stuff that's valuable. I think that's a real talent in any walk of life is to like taking in all this data and stuff and whatever, and then saying, oh, this can help my team. This is not worth spending another minute on.
Yep, sure, exactly.
So
Well, there's the old adage, and Lou Holtz was great at this. You praise in public, you criticize in private. And I think that's what these coaches are doing, where if a player plays well, it's every word out of the coach's mouth. Look how well he did. Good on him. Practiced hard. He was ready to go. And in situations where things go, they take the criticism on themselves. So like you said, I put so-and-so in a bad situation. I should have made a better play call there. That is what tells the players that the coaches have their backs. Put it this way. If the player's in the locker room, if there were some plays where a player screwed up, that player knows he screwed up. It doesn't matter what the coach says in the press conference.
Yeah.
If Christian Gray, for example, makes a bad play and gives up a touchdown, he knows what he did. If Golden goes in the press conference and says, yeah, you know, we didn't have the right coverage there. That was my fault. I should have got. But what that tells Christian Gray is, I'm not going to go out there. You know you screwed up. I'm not going to go out there and tell everybody beyond the shadow of a doubt that you screwed up. I'm going to put some benefit of the doubt out there. I'm going to take the focus off you. But when we get into the film room, you don't think I'm not going to chew your ass out for making that mistake? But he's definitely doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the whole "I got your back" mentality. I mean, I think that's the whole culture of that team. They clearly are gelling, and there's something going on in the locker room that's positive. And credit to Marcus Freeman and his staff for pulling that off. But that is what I think is going to be the differentiator in this game, and I think it's going to be what gives us that chance to pull this one out. And it's going to be I think it's going to be a great game. I'm so much looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great college football at a very high level. But so I'm going to start with you, Coffee, because you tend to have the wild predictions. What's your prediction for the game?
I'm going to disappoint in this one then. the two things I think are going to happen is, number one, I think Mitchell Evans is going to have a great game. I think that he is slowly improved over the course.
He's due, yeah.
Well, he's slowly improved over the course of the season. I mean, let's face it, he was relatively invisible in the first half when he was still recovering from that injury. Now he's getting himself open. I think Leonard is looking for him a little bit more. I think he's going to have some drive sustaining catches, and I think he's going to have a good game. I also think Xavier Watts is going to have a pick six in the last 3 minutes for a 28-17 Notre Dame win.
Sounds kind of wild to me, but anyways.
Yeah.
45-5.
All right, Ed, what do you think?
Gosh. You know, I found myself strangely feeling fairly decent about this game over the course of the last couple of days, and I didn't the first 3 or 4 days. I think the thing that always concerns me about a game like this is that is that when a team like Georgia sort of cracks the code or sort of puts it together, they're probably the most talented, you know, team in the country, or maybe 1-1A with Texas or 1-1A with Oregon or something like that. I mean, just in terms of sort of raw athletic ability and talent and football, sort of stars and all that kind of stuff, that does matter. But they showed some real clay feet this year against a couple of opponents. I don't think Georgia Tech's necessarily analogous or necessarily good comparison point, just because Georgia Tech's a completely different team with Haynes King or whatever his name is, the quarterback. Yeah. But I'm, you know, I kind of have a feeling that Mitch Jeter is going to make or break us in this game. And if we win, he'll be 3-for-4 or 4-for-4. And if we lose, he'll be 2-for-4 or 2-for-5 or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to say it's going to be, a 1-2-3-point game either way. And I hate picking with my heart, but I'm going to say that it's very similar to the last couple of games, Notre Dame Georgia games. You know, it's in the high teens or low 20s, and Notre Dame wins 23-21.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of with you, but I just have this gut this instinct that we are going to kind of pull away at the end. I don't know why, but I got us winning 30-20. And I'm with you, though, Ed. I think the key to the game will be if there's not a missed field goal, because I think Notre Dame could be pretty tough with Jeter kicking well. And if you're inside of 50 yards and he's knocking them through, I just think that puts a heck of a lot of pressure on Georgia to respond with as good as our defense has been playing. So yeah. I like a slow.
When you play a team like Georgia, you really can't squander opportunities.
None.
If you get a turnover on their side of the field, you have to get points.
Got
to
get points.
If you're in the red zone, you have to get points. I mean, you just have to. Yep.
And I think that's where the whole scheming comes in, and that's how detailed this gets at this level. And you know, you take over a possession inside their 50. Then you're going to run these unique one-on-one matchups that you know that you're guaranteed to get that one-on-one. You're not going to burn that play on your own 30-yard line. I mean, you just can't do that. You're going to have to survive those deep possessions so that once you do get inside the 50, then all knives come out with whatever you've got in your back pocket to get 10 yards, you know, to get you in that position to nail that three-pointer and put points on the board. But I think it's going to be so critical that first quarter, because that's going to set the pace for, I think we're going to know at the end of the first quarter, what are we looking at? Because there's going to be some fired up guys on that field that have to play within themselves. And that's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a good data point at the end of the first quarter.
I mean, I'm not familiar enough with Georgia's personnel, but it just seems to me that obviously they have good skilled players, but they don't have great sort of, you know, game change. They don't have George Pickens. They don't have Brock Bowers. They don't have Sony Michel. They don't have these guys that are just sort of game breakers. And I hope maybe I'll be proved wrong. And so to me, that makes it a game, you know, and their success this year has been when Beck has played well, because I think that they don't have those, you know, total studs.
Yeah. They got them on defense. They just don't have them on offense. You're right. They got the playmakers on defense. They just don't seem to have them on offense. But I tend to agree with you there. Yeah, and I mean, as always, everybody always talks about the turnover battle and all that. But in a game, I mean, this is what separates these teams when it's like that. You know, it's turnovers. It's those are just big momentum shifts that are really hard to survive from and come from behind when that happens. And I think, you know, this is what we're looking at. But I think it's just great. I think it's exciting. This is so good for Notre Dame, and so rewarding for Freeman after, you know, having what he went through the first three games of the year. And the bounce back.
Hopefully the games are good, because the regular old bowl games have been a lot better and more fun than the
playoffs. Yeah, I'll tell you, the USC, I watched the USC, Texas A&M. I mean, I know there's guys out and everything, so it's tough to – but, man, I'll tell you, USC's got some playmakers on that team. I mean, man, there's some serious guys with some talent, and they're going to be good. I think that quarterback's going to have a huge level of experience from what he went through this year. He can make some throws. He's just got to get a little bit smarter up there, and man, they're going to be tough. USC's going to come back. They're not going to. That's a good football program.
Yeah. And we play A&M, and A&M is very, very talented.
Yeah, A&M is A&M.
They're more talented.
Well coached. They got a lot of talent coming in. They've got a lot of young talent. A lot of young guys. You know, this is Elko. He'll be in his second year. There won't be his first game. You know.
Right.
So thank God that one's at home. So we'll see what happens with that. Awesome. We'll leave it there. You're listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.